Good evening and welcome back to The Truth Tank. I am your host, The Tank. If this is your first time listening to The Truth Tank, a big welcome. If you're a repeat listener, welcome back. This is part two of our deep dive into the look at the Academy Awards and the slap heard around the world. We're going to pick it up right where we left off, looking at the article, How to Win an Oscar, by Alyssa Wilkinson on Vox.com, published February 21, 2019. So if you haven't listened to it, I suggest you hit pause and go ahead and listen to that now. Right, so without further delay, let's get into tonight's show. This is episode 36 of The Truth Tank, Ding Dong, Oscar's Dead, Part 2. Crack the campaign handbook, mail some DVDs, and start shaking hands. In 2019, Boots Riley debut feature, Sorry to Bother You, didn't earn any Oscar nominations. It's not a national Oscar pick, a surreal dystopian social comedy horror. But fans were incensed, in particular over the exclusion of any of the film's music from the Best Original Song category. Riley is best known as the lead vocalist of The Coup, and with the group he recorded the album's soundtrack. So he replied on Twitter, offering a mini explainer on how things work once Oscar campaigns begin. The largest factor as to why we didn't get nominated is that we didn't actually run a campaign that aimed to get a nomination for screenplay or song, Riley tweeted. We didn't buy for your consideration ads in the trade magazines, and we didn't service the whole Academy with screeners. Without that, it's perceived that you don't have a chance or enough buzz. Interesting. So in a way, the Oscars, like many other businesses, are a pay-to-play system. If you don't take out the ads in the trade publications, send out the mailer DVDs, and do the whole song and dance, you're not going to get noticed. Which also means you're not going to get nominated. So if you don't pay, you can't really play the game. Academy members don't just vote for a thing they like if they think it doesn't have a chance. It's like that with most voting, he continued. So when you break it down, it is a pretty unfair system. It's nearly rigged in a way, because if you don't put a lot of money into an advertising campaign, you're not going to get anywhere. You're not going to get any attention from the Academy. And while your movie might do well financially or commercially, it's not going to win the gold shiny thing that makes it all prestigious and better than every other movie. And to the executives and the film studios, that's a pretty big thing. They're all about that prestige because they think that Oscars sell movies. If they get that little gold Oscar sticker next to a poster, it makes the film so much better, right? But in reality, a lot of the movies that do get nominated and win Best Picture are loads of shit. They're boring, over-the-top social dramas with a political agenda. Or at least most of them are nowadays. That is not to say that we would have gotten a nomination if we had run a traditional Oscars campaign. Because at that point, it becomes about which of the contenders they like the most. It's just that not doing a campaign made it a self-fulfilling prophecy that we wouldn't get nominated. So I had no actual belief that we would get nominated. I just enjoyed the parties, free drinks, and hanging out with really talented filmmakers that inspire me, many of them who got nominated. And the campaign that we did do, press runs, red carpet stuff, got a lot more people to see the movie. That's for me the big attraction to any film award, he concluded. Riley's tweets explained the first thing that any successful Oscar campaign has to do, get the movie on Academy voters' radar as a movie that could win. And that means spending money. A typical campaign involves lots and lots of contact between studios, publicists, and the voters. Yeah, so you have to have a pretty good backer or a lot of money lying around or saved in an account for a rainy day to even think about an Oscars campaign. That's also why a lot of those smaller films don't ever really get a look in. How many worthy films and hidden gems have never been noticed by the Academy due to this system? There's probably a lot of like Oscar quality films that have just gotten lost to time because they haven't got noticed, or they don't make the criteria of the Academy Awards because they can't afford to go on a campaign trail. Smaller films and studios don't have the budget, the resources, all the power to compete with the bigger studios and the bigger films. Smaller independent films do get nominated from time to time, and they're always included in Best Picture, but they're not really the lowest budget independent films. they're usually of a certain budget and quality. So in a way, Moonlight is a example of a kind of a smaller, I'm not sure if you'd call it an independent film, but a smaller semi-independent film that went up against these massive films with bigger budgets, bigger studios, and competed. They obviously put a lot of time, effort, and money into their campaign. It's a lot more difficult and a lot more costly for a smaller studio, like, for instance, let's say Blue Sky Productions or something like that, or, you know, Blue Frog Pictures. It's a lot more expensive and taxing on a smaller film studio like that to promote a film and go on the Oscars campaign than it is for a Universal Studios or a 20th Century Fox. They have millions of dollars at their disposal that they're not probably going to miss. Probably all end up as a tax write-off anyway. They have a lot more resources and personnel to put into a campaign than a smaller independent production company, or know the right people in the industry. And when you think about it, that's kind of an industry within an industry. You have a whole bottom-feeding, middleman marketing and advertising industry that you kind of have to know and work with within the film industry if you want your film noticed by the Academy. You've got to pay them a lot of money, or, you know, be nice to them, and you'd probably have to have a good relationship with these people because they are the ones that are going to market and promote your film. They also probably charge a hell of a lot of money to do so as well. Academy members receive, for your consideration, FYC booklets, DVDs, copies of screenplays and CDs of soundtracks. They field invitations to screenings and Q&As, and they are targeted by FYC ads in industry publications on social media. And if they live in a place like New York or Los Angeles, ads on billboards, in the subway and atop cabs. The process usually starts in the fall after the blitz of film festivals in Venice, Telluride and Toronto, and intensifies over the next 6 months leading up to the Oscars. So it is very much like a political campaign. You have to be on the road for pretty much a year when your film comes out. So in a way, Hollywood is just like Washington. It's just as political. There's a lot of people to win over, a lot of people you want on your side, a lot of hands to grease, and a lot of people you need to get to like you and your film. Back to the article. Doing these things just raises awareness of a film and creates a notion that it has the potential to be a part of the Oscar conversation, which makes people put it on their to-watch list. And as Riley notes, not doing these things can have the opposite effect. If voters don't think a film has a chance, they're less likely to prioritize watching it. Once you've built some buzz around your film, you have to actually get it out and meet the voters, especially the ones who aren't your personal friends. The Academy is large, though the role isn't published. Estimates suggest it's currently more than 8,000 members. Fucking hell, how does anyone make a decision with that many members in it? And to get on as many voters' radars as possible, nominees need to appeal to everyone, with a tireless ability to answer questions, shake hands, and make people love them. Yeah, that's a pretty hard job. There's a lot of people to try and win over. And the fact that no one really knows how many people's in the Academy kind of also feeds into the whole mystery around them and the whole Illuminati-esque light they're portrayed in. Actors and directors who campaign well, that is, who find ways to make personal connections with voters, often do much better on the award circuit. As with presidents, that means extroverts, or at least those who can project a gregarious image for months on end, are often more successful. Tom Hanks is known to be able to turn on the charm on demand. Michael Fassbender is said to be the exact opposite. Among directors, you have the effusive Guillermo del Toro on one side and the reserved Christopher Nolan on the other. That is interesting. So if you are a more introverted director or an actor, you're going to have a hell of a lot harder time on the campaign trail than if you're an extroverted actor or director. And not very fair if you are an introvert. I'm a bit of an introvert myself. I probably wouldn't do very well on the campaign trail. I don't think I would be very good at talking to the media and doing Q&As every single day. I think they'd wear pretty thin. And it'd be get pretty fucking annoying after about 3 or 4 days. On the other hand, if you are a Tom Hanks type of person and you are extroverted and you can turn in on the charm, then basically the campaign trail is just another stage for you to perform on. And they are actors, so they have the necessary skills to get into character even if you're an introvert and you're an actor, you're obviously going to have those skills. So you, in a way, you're just playing another part. You're just playing a altered version of yourself, in a way, in front of the media, the Q&A panels, and to the public while the campaign trail is going on. And, you know, you don't know if you're going to get nominated the next year. And most people in the industry, most actors and directors, probably only get one chance at making it to the Academy Awards or winning an Oscar. Some might get several chances or 10 chances. You just don't know. So you never quite know if it's going to be your first or your last Academy Awards. Just attending the Academy Awards ceremony is one thing, but winning an Oscar is another thing. And that doesn't happen to very many actors or directors or anyone in the industry that often. If you already put all this effort into making the film or performing in the film and getting to the Academy Awards, you might as well put a little more in and try and seal the deal and get noticed by the Academy and the voters. Can't hurt your chances, right? It also might explain why Christopher Nolan's never been nominated for Best Director. I mean, personally, I think he's one of the best modern directors, if not the best modern director around. And he's definitely one of the best directors in film for a very long time, if not ever. His movies are Oscar worthy. Is that a legitimate reason as to why Christopher Nolan has never been nominated for Best Director? Some of his movies have been nominated for Best Picture, like Dunkirk, but I'm pretty sure he's never been nominated for Best Director. That might explain why he's more of the outside chances, because yeah, he's quiet and reserved and probably doesn't take a lot of shit. And for the most part, if you want an Oscar, you need to show up at the events, answer questions from audience members after the screenings. Be friendly to journalists and find a way to elicit feelings like, "Oh, I love her," when they hear your name. You may need to take selfies with fans or voters, show up to receive awards at smaller festivals attended by Academy members, and eat 3 meals a day at campaign events. And there are the endless Q&As in which you have to muster the energy to answer questions you've answered 1,000 times before with cheer and kindness, lest you turn off a voter. Yeah, that sounds like fucking hell. I'm probably never going to win an Oscar. Just based on some of that stuff, that sounds fucking horrific. That sounds like it would be physically and mentally draining. Some people like Fassbender or Rooney Mara are said to actively hate the campaign trail, and I can't imagine why. That can definitely hurt your chances, but though it sometimes doesn't matter, as Michael Shulman noted in The New Yorker, the actresses Monique refused to campaign for her supporting role in Precious, and won anyway. Being gregarious and well-liked raises your profile in positive ways, and that always helps. The bottom line is that no matter what narrative your film is part of, you have to ensure that Academy members will see your film. Connect to its story and remember it come voting time. The more opportunities there are to do this, the better. And so during Oscar season, there are screenings with cocktails and Q&A. There are dinners and breakfasts and luncheons and teas and cocktail receptions hosted by celebrities and influencers. Stars and Oscar hopefuls show up for meet and greets and make surprise appearances at screenings. They appear on podcasts and do video tours and make the rounds on late night comedy shows and a lot more. Members of the press are often invited to these events and are sometimes asked to moderate Q&As after screenings, which means I get a first-hand glimpse at how hectic the year and event schedule can be for the awards voters. Also doesn't hurt to have a charismatic star or director in your film or making your film, especially if you have an underwhelming film that isn't garnering the attention of the Academy that you hoped it would. Having a charismatic actor who goes on the campaign trail and goes out to bat for the film would be a very good way to get some attention to your film. All they have to do is say the right thing, shake the right hands, get in the ear of some of the Academy members and go, "Hey, look, this is a great independent film. This is yada, yada, yada. You should consider this film. Here's a PR packet." Also brings up the question of how much free shit do these people get? You're getting screeners and soundtracks, copies of scripts and all this other crap, getting invited to all these parties and Q&A sessions, I should say. So yeah, charismatic star could potentially flip the odds of your film being nominated for Academy Award or even just noticed by the Academy. So if you don't have a charismatic star or a director in your film, why not go and get a celebrity or an influencer friend of yours to host a party? They host a party. They invite a couple of their Academy member friends or influencers in the industry. They talk your film up, get it noticed, and before you know it, you find yourself on the Oscars campaign trail. That's another useful strategy you can use if you don't have an A-lister in the film, or you don't have millions of dollars to waste on a campaign. The campaign trail must drag on for months, if not most of the year. It'd take a pretty big personal toll on a lot of people and cost a lot of time with families and stuff like that. Because just when you've got through the 2 years or 3 years of making the film or however long it is, then you've got to head back out on the road for another, 6 to 10 months of campaigning for the Oscars. So there's a lot of fucking work that goes into these movies, and I don't think I'm going to look at Oscar nominees quite the same way after knowing this. So in all the shaking hands and talking to people and, you know, taking photos and stuff with fans and all the Q&A, it's probably not a lot of people who do this in back-to-back years. You'd probably need a year off before you went on another Oscars campaign, because it'd probably drive you nuts after a while. There are some rules about how much you can contact or badger an Academy member about your movie. The Academy limits the number of mailings and screening invitations a member can receive for each film. You can't call an Academy member on the phone to promote a film or an achievement, such as a performance or a technical accomplishment. The rule was developed in response to a favorite tactic employed by Oscar campaigner Harvey Weinstein. Surprise, surprise, Weinstein did something that was quote-unquote unethical. Though descriptions of his calls characterize them less as enthusiastic promotion and more as discomforting intimidation, sometimes they've been liked to browbeating. More on that below. So there are some rules to the campaign. You can't just, you know, ring people up every single day of the week, ask them to watch your movie and to vote for it. So that there is some limitations on what you can and can't do. So in a way, that is kind of fair. I mean, they don't limit how much money you can spend on a campaign, which they probably should, to make it fairer to smaller studios and films. But it is good that they do limit what you can and can't do. There are some rules and restrictions. So a big studio like 20th Century Fox can't just pump millions of dollars into paying people to, you know, endlessly badger Academy members around the clock. And that would also probably get very boring and tedious from the Academy side of things. So the in one side, they're protecting themselves, but they're also it also is making it a more fairer playing field. But it's probably more so to do with them not being badgered 24/7. Sometimes events are hosted by celebrities. You also can't put the Oscar equivalent of attack ads on competing films. And once the nominations are announced, typically in mid-January, you can't invite Academy members to any event that doesn't include a screening. So luncheons and cocktails are out. Sometimes events are hosted by celebrities and influencers who aren't directly connected to a film. This serves the same purpose that endorsements do in the political realm. I remember that Barbara Streisand hosted one of the first hosted screenings we did for La La Land in LA, Horwitz said. Her support of the movie meant quite a bit, and that kind of thing happens throughout the season. At the beginning, the middle, and the end, he continued. People say, here's a movie I love and here's why. They can help you craft a narrative. Olin, the political consultant who worked on Obama's re-election campaign, and noted, the need in political campaigns to locate influential people or people who are likely to be good messengers to the audience you're trying to reach. That's why a lot of campaigns are strategic in who they recruit to be celebrity influencers, she said. Getting someone who has a big, important voice to host a screening for your movie is crucial, Horwitz said. Horwitz told me. Their endorsement of the movie, and most likely their presence at a screening, will get people in the door who may not know much about the film, but know that if Brad Pitt or Sean King or Kenneth Lonergan or Eddie Falco or Jake Gyllenhaal or Billie Jean King or Julianne Moore, Terrence Ellis Ross is hosting the screening, it's probably worth checking out. All of those people were named as hosts of screenings, to which I was invited this fall, and I'm not even an Academy member. The Academy has rules around this too, in particular once nominations are announced. Academy members are prohibited from appearing in support of films that they weren't specifically involved with. But leading up to nominations, all bets are off, and such endorsements are among the best ways to connect with the people who will eventually propel a film to gold. All this means the Oscar campaigns are very expensive. Sometimes the studio has to buy the ads, pay for the screeners and screenings, mail the DVDs, rent the event spaces, order the food, give honorariums to Q&A moderators and fly nominees all over the country, plus studios hire experienced consultants to run campaigns for the nominees. Consultants who are often taking pages right from the most notorious Oscar campaigner in Hollywood history. Oscar campaigns involve all this work because in 1999, Harvey Weinstein upended the industry in more ways than one. Oscar campaigns weren't always quite so involved. For decades, campaigns were competitive, but still more genteel affairs, and didn't so closely resemble the more aggressive tactics and expenditures of modern American politics. That all changed about 20 years ago, particularly when counterattacks on films became a common Oscar season occurrence. And the reason, believe it or not, lies in the work of one man, Harvey Weinstein. These days, when reporters, critics, and industry insiders see an Oscar campaign employing strong-arm tactics and bad-mouthing films, we tend to say something like, "That smells like Weinstein." Though Weinstein is now a persona non grata in the industry, it would be difficult to overstate the effect he had on the modern shape of Oscar campaigns, beginning in the mid-90s, when he was becoming a force to be reckoned with. He figured out how to corral screenings, mailings, and events to craft a narrative around an Oscar hopeful like nobody had before, and it worked. In 91, just before Weinstein's time, the New York Times reported that studios were concerned with being, quote, "persistent without being so pushy as to risk a voter backlash, and to be innovative without overlooking traditional tactics proven to work," end quote. The article went on to note that the new practice of sending video cassettes to Academy members that they could view in their own homes so they wouldn't have to trek out to screenings. Some Academy members told the paper about receiving a handwritten letter from Diane Ladd, who was eventually nominated for her supporting role in 1990's Wild at Heart, or receiving invitations to parties sponsored by Leonard Nimoy. The backbone of any Academy Award campaign, however, continues to be in the advertisements taken out in trade journals like Variety and The Hollywood Reporter, the article said. But in 1990, Weinstein upended the playbook for good when he ran what's being called a bully campaign that resulted in Shakespeare in Love beating out the seemingly unbeatable Saving Private Ryan for Best Picture. For more on how he pulled off this win and many more after 1999, see Vulture's extensive rundown of his tactics, which got more aggressive as time went on. That really does make you wonder how Shakespeare in Love could beat Saving Private Ryan, because Shakespeare in Love is good, but it's not that good. It doesn't have the themes or dramatic or historical elements that Saving Private Ryan does. Private Ryan is a hell of a lot better film, in my opinion. So how does a romantic comedy historical drama beat a historical drama for Best Picture, one that's directed by Steven Spielberg, a master filmmaker? As a result of Weinstein's clearly effective tactics with Shakespeare in Love's upset, other studios started spending more money and employing outside consultants, some of whom had worked closely with Weinstein. Many of today's most in-demand Oscar campaign consultants are Weinstein alums. One key tactic in the Weinstein playbook that would keep a movie at the forefront of a voter's mind. So there are some rules to the bully campaign tactic, in a way, but there's also a lot of ways around them, by the sound of it. It does prohibit naming a film outright, but you can always get around that. And with the resources that Harvey Weinstein had and a lot of those studios, you could just pay anybody to talk shit about your competitor. You could on the sly hire a hack journalist who's looking to make his name, come up with some hit piece about, you know, Spielberg on the set of Saving Private Ryan pushing extras around or something like that, or, you know, not doing things safely. Leaked it to a member of the Academy who was high up or connected in some way. That goes down to the press or whatever, then it spreads like wildfire. Very dodgy and very deceitful. Events can be any moment during a film's Oscar campaign that sticks in voters' memories, and they can change the course of a campaign. So it matters if a person won at the Golden Globes, but it may matter more if their speech made a splash. It matters when and how they appear in news headlines. It matters because it can change at some level the dynamic of conversation that we want to have take place on the stage, Marigolis said. Voters decide on what films move up. It also might explain why Harvey Weinstein produced so many Oscar bait movies. I mean, he obviously wanted to win as many Oscars as possible, and he had a certain tactic he used to try and get the job done. Because he had a lot of movies nominated in the 90s and the 2000s until it turned out that, guess what, he was a sex pest and complete pervert. Harvey just got caught. There's probably a lot of current producers that have gone underground or gone very quiet, were probably just as bad as he was. Harvey Weinstein is obviously the exception. I'm not surprised this stuff has come out about him. You just look at him and he looks like a dodgy piece of shit. And in light of what we know about Weinstein's playbook and the bullying campaigns, it's not that surprising. It would also explain why his ugly fucking head was always in the front row of the Oscars whenever they went to a close-up of the crowd. And so many actors and actresses thanked Harvey Weinstein like he was some sort of god in their acceptance speech. Yeah, you can only imagine what he was saying during these bully campaigns and how he came up with some of the lies. How did he spread them? Did he just ring up the tabloids or a newspaper or an industry journal and start sprouting off fucking outright lies about a competing film like Saving Private Ryan? Did he make up complete bullshit that was based on no facts or evidence at all? Also makes you wonder, how did he not get sued? Because if he was outrightly lying and slandering the competition, doesn't that literally just constitute as slander or tarnishing of one's name? It also shows the effectiveness of these quote-unquote bully campaigns Weinstein ran. Kind of makes you wonder why Hollywood doesn't have some type of failsafe for this. Why don't they have some type of anti-bully campaign squad that can counteract some of these claims? They might. They probably do. I don't really know. But it seems very dodgy, because if you are just slinging complete lies around and fictionalizing supposed things that happened on set, or you're trying to manipulate certain facts and twist them to your own advantage, it shouldn't be that hard to expose them as complete bullshit and complete lies. It's like if Harvey Weinstein is making up bullshit about Slumdog Millionaire, surely the producers of the film can come out, hit back and say, no, this is bullshit. This is complete lies grounded on nothing. The same way you would in any political campaign. And it's not exactly like it's a recognized campaign strategy, but it does happen. And it does make you wonder a bit why the Academy hasn't quite got on top of the bully campaign. And if they know what happens, why don't they do more to try and stop it? Because it doesn't seem like there is, well, to my knowledge anyway, it doesn't look like there are many fail-safes to counteract it. They put certain rules in place to limit how much you can campaign for a film, as in not, calling or badgering people in the Academy every day, but they seem to have missed the mark on this one. What a sneaky fucking cunt Weinstein was. And I'll have to cover that on another show. That sounds pretty interesting. Might see if I can track down that article and do a deep dive into the playbook of Harvey Weinstein. And just what some of the other dirty tricks he used to manipulate the Academy to his advantage. So it makes you wonder what the campaign trail was like pre-Weinstein era. The article mentioned it was less aggressive, but you'd still have to make the assumption that similar kind of tactics probably went on. It probably wasn't as overt as Weinstein's, but they still would have used a couple of dirty tricks here and there. It is likely, for instance, that when Viola Davis won Best Supporting Actress in the drama Fences at the Golden Globes in 2017, which I thought was one of the most boring movies I've ever seen, then honoured her father and spoke about the importance of theatre in America, Oscar voters fondly remembered her emotion and commitment when voting opened. Davis went on to win the Oscar for Best Supporting Actress, and her acceptance speech, she called for the industry to start exhuming and exalting ordinary lives, as Fences playwright August Wilson did. Winning at the Globes prompted a memorable event, the speech, and that stuck in the mind of voters. Events can be negative, of course. A bad or offensive speech at the Globes or a negative story leaked to the press could have the opposite effect. For a political analogue, think of FBI Director James Comey's announcement 11 days before the 2016 election, that Hillary Clinton was still under investigation, or the Access Hollywood tape on Donald Trump. And following the recent controversy surrounding the tweets of erstwhile Oscar host Kevin Hart and Green Book co-writer Nick Vallelonga, it's somewhat inevitable studios will add comb through past social media posts to their campaign handbooks in the future to stave off any bad events that could sink a film's chances. In the Weinstein playbook, the aim is to have good events, from pleasant interactions with and stories about filmmakers to having your stars testify before Congress or helping change old and unjust laws for your films. But the flip side is also important. If you can provoke bad events and bad stories around your competitors' films, well, that's their problem, right? That's a drawback of the need to create a story around your film. If your film ends up tied to a bad story, it could be a big problem. If your film starts looking like it fits a bad archetype, a fate that Weinstein is suspected of bringing upon Slumdog Millionaire in 2009, by planting a story in the press that the filmmakers were exploiting their subject. Ah, sneaky fucking prick. Or promotes bad values because someone suggests it's racially insensitive, for instance, your chances may be sunk. Yeah, so you can sabotage your competitors by making up a fake news story, essentially, and leaking it to the press. Whether it's true or not, it's a different story, and you know that happens in politics and everyday life. People don't really care about facts. They only care about what they think they believe because the media tells them to. The story about Slumdog Millionaire might be complete bullshit, or there might have some truth to it, it might be completely true, or there might be a slight grain of truth to that story that is twisted and manipulated and then released to the press, and then everyone thinks that the people who made that film are monsters and don't deserve to win. And Weinstein seems very good at exploiting or using that pretty dodgy tactic to try and sink other movies. Which is funny, because if anyone knew what he was really up to at that time, it would have been really easy to get back at him. Knowing about how perverted he was and how he treated actresses, he would have gone down like a bag of shit. If people had released, you know, Harvey Weinstein jerks off in pot plant in front of actress. Imagine that story before an Oscars campaign, or you know, Harvey Weinstein sexually assaulted actress in dressing room or office. Imagine that story coming out a couple of weeks or a couple of months before an Oscars campaign started. And this is the same Hollywood that has tried so hard to stamp out fake news, or perpetuate it, depending on your point of view. And yet they let this form of fake news go unscathed. That's not to suggest that all criticism of a film plants from the campaigns of its Oscar competitors. Just not as all criticism for political candidates come as a result of stories dug up by their opponents. Sometimes a film or a candidate has generally bad ideas, has acted in an unethical way, or simply deserves a criticism. You know, it's completely true too. But the tactic is so appealing and effective that it seems plausible to suggest that any story or criticism that suffices could be a campaign trick, rather than, for instance, journalism. For example, in January, following Green Book's Golden Globes win, the film found itself at a centre of two controversies on the same day. One was because old stories surfaced about the film's director, Peter Farrelly, exposing himself to women as a joke, something that likely even more people now find decidedly unfunny than when he was doing it. Then an Islamophobic tweet by the film's co-writer Nick Vangelio, whose father is portrayed by Viggo Mortensen in the film, which is based on a true story, suddenly resurfaced as well. In the 2015 tweet, Vangelio enthusiastically corroborated Trump's account of Muslims celebrating in New Jersey on 9/11. When it resurfaced, it drew immediate outcry, resulting in Vangelio deleting his account and apologizing. On top of everything, one of the film's stars, Mahershala Ali, is a practicing Muslim. Rumors flew that these resurfaced stories could be part of a smear campaign against Green Book by a rival studio. The film had only been a moderate success with audiences to this point, and there had been plenty of critical stories about it focusing on its glossing over of history, and on criticism of its story from the family of Don Shirley, whom Ali plays in the film. And it's entirely possible, with the ease of searching the internet and Twitter, and the renewed interest in the film after its Golden Globes win, some random film fan just started poking around. Yes, the timing feels like pure Weinstein, but while Weinstein himself liked to cultivate the idea that so many of today's Oscar tactics originated with him, it's pretty obvious to anyone who's lived through a couple of presidential election cycles that they're identical to what happens every few years in America. It's all politics. There's one thing an Oscar campaign can't do that a political campaign can: run attack ads. So in other words, you got no fucking clue what to believe, what is true and what isn't. Just like pretty much every other aspect of life these days, you don't know what is true and what's false. Some of these stories could be real, some could be complete horseshit. It's very hard to find out the truth to these claims when you don't know where they came from or what they're really based on. Is there any truth to them at all, or is it complete fiction? And just like the political realm, it's very hard to know who is honest and who's not. Politicians talk complete bullshit. They talk a good game, but they fail to deliver on their promises time and time again. This is a very similar thing. You just don't know what's true and what's not. The Academy's rulebook explicitly bans any tactic that singles out the competition by name or title. If you're caught doing otherwise, the punishment is steep. A 1-year suspension of membership for first offences and expulsion for repeat offenders. But there's always ways to get around this, mostly by seeding negative stories about the competition or starting whisper campaigns against the frontrunner. All that entails is starting a rumour with a few well-connected members of the Academy who talk to their friends, who talk to their friends and so on. In 1999, Weinstein's shop allegedly started a whisper campaign against Saving Private Ryan, suggesting it peaked in the first 20 minutes. That sort of assessment is fairly subjective, but even when the stories and allegations are based on real-life events, as with, for instance, an alleged whisper campaign against Casey Affleck regarding accusations of sexual misconduct before his lead actor win for By Manchester with the Sea in 2017, the timing of the stories often seems like a calculated effort to take down a particular film or person, one that smacks of political opposition research efforts. Once again, straight from the political handbook, I mean, it's a very dirty and deceitful tactic to use, and this is one that's been used in politics since day one, and it's found its way into the film industry. Now, with the rise of social media and everybody voicing their opinions, especially stars on social media, it's not that hard to find ammunition to fire back at stars, especially if you want to discredit them. Before the age of the PC Brigade and the Me Too movement, celebrities weren't as cautious of what they said online as they are now. So there's a lot of what would be considered by today's standards very dodgy things some of these people said from 10 plus years ago that can be used to discredit them. If an actor or someone like that is nominated for a Academy Award, a Grammy, whatever it is. All this adds up to a strange truth. Even with this playbook in hand, it's impossible to guarantee a win. And maybe harder these days than it's ever been. There are necessary conditions to win at the Oscars, just as there are in politics, but there are no sufficient ones to guarantee you'll bring home the golden statue at the end of a long, weary months of campaigning. Very true. It's still pretty up in the air. Without the campaign, it's probably 20-80. With a decent campaign, it's probably 50-50. With a heavily influenced or manipulated campaign, it's probably more like 60-40. So even if you go to all the effort of spending all this money, going on a bully campaign and doing all this other shit, there's still no guarantee that it's actually going to have much of an effect on your overall Oscars campaign. It may, and it probably does help to get things moving or helps advertise you or your film or, you know, get the attention of the Academy that you kind of want, but there's no guarantee that you're going to get the gold statue at the end of the night. Just like everything else. Same is true, very true for politics. Just because you're the best candidate doesn't mean you're going to win the election. Hillary Clinton thought she was the better candidate. She was quote-unquote, the more politically experienced candidate. And she lost to Trump. A campaign does get your name out there and promotes your film. But even trying all those tactics, does it really guarantee you're going to get the Oscar? Probably not. Are the Oscars good for movies? There's something delightful about the Oscars. They can be silly and exhausting and sometimes seen like a giant waste of time and money. But it's nice to see people avidly watching, discussing and rewinding films that exhibit the best the art form has to offer. It's immensely satisfying when the right film wins. Yet winning an Oscar doesn't really have to do with making a great movie. Winning is about selling the movie well to Academy voters, spending a lot of money and time convincing them to vote for your film and not someone else's. In this case, money definitely does talk. Is this good? In the end, for movies and the people who make them, it's hard to say definitively. Hollywood has never been just about the art of cinema. It's always been about the business too. An Oscar win can boost the chances that an actor or filmmaker or artist will go to work again, and can prompt more people to watch the movie too. Yet chatter about the Oscars, chances and snubs and strategies tends to suck the air out of the room, sometimes relegating the actual films to the sidelines or pushing worthy movies out of the spotlight if they don't nab a nomination. Films really get the breathing room they need to unsettle and challenge us before we start talking about whether they'll win the horse race. And campaigns work hard to give us an official line on a movie and to convince people the film's the most important, the one that should get the trophy. This urge to turn movies into sports or politics, maybe because those are the metaphors American media consumers know best, downplays the films themselves. Instead, they become pawns in a contest that is often won by whoever ran the best campaign. There can be kind of a thrill in following that race, in watching for developments and predicting winners, all culminating on the big night. But as in politics, the substance of the films themselves can get lost among the oversimplification and glitzy elements required to position those films to win. And if the Oscars keep with the two-decade trend of growing into a bigger, louder, more contentious money pit, I don't know how much longer the joy really can last. Movies fertilize the American imagination. I would say movies fertilize the global imagination. There's something inherent in the human psyche about storytelling, and I think movies in particular are probably one of the best mediums, if not the best, for, along with television, for storytelling. They tell us what to care about and to whom to root for. They become the way we project our self-image to the world, and the Oscars justifiably play a big role in how we think about Hollywood in its given moment. But when the scale starts to tip more toward the art of winning than the art of movie making, we're in danger of losing the heart of precisely what the Oscars are supposed to celebrate. And I think that's a pretty brilliantly written and researched article, and it's 100% right in my very uninformed opinion. That last part hits the nail on the head. They become so focused on the glitz and the glamour and the money side of the Academy Awards that they've really forgotten about the movies they're trying to celebrate. And that's not good for movies. It just shows the world that the Academy Awards are corruptible, like so many other industries that have fallen victim to greed in the last century. So the real victim in all of this are the movies and the people who work in the film industry. And that degrades the art form it's trying to celebrate. I think the article brilliantly sums up what is wrong with the Academy Awards and Hollywood in general. The Oscars has become about winning and about the campaign trail so much that they have literally forgotten about the films themselves, the films they're supposed to be celebrating. The obsession with winning has ruined the Academy Awards, and the Academy has no one to blame but themselves. Their own greed and arrogance and obsession with trying to please every audience and be current and political has backfired horrifically. That's some of the issues with the Academy and with Hollywood itself. Like I just said, it's more about the art of the campaign and the actual art of the film itself. Especially in recent years where a lot of the movies are so mediocre or boring, a lot of people are saying, that movie was crap, you know, we saw that and we thought that was boring. How did that win Best Picture, or how did he or she win Best Actor or Actress? It's how it's marketed, not about what it's made out of. So if the article is correct, then that also feeds into the hypocrisy aspect of Hollywood. It's more important to have a clever marketing campaign for the film than the actual quality of the film itself, and that's what influences the votes of the Academy. Then this is hypocrisy in action again. But given what we know now, does the best film win? Does the best film ever win? That's one thing I will slightly disagree with. Is if it's so, maybe not easy, but if it is possible to influence campaigns and discredit other films, combine that with the pay-to-play system of the Oscar campaign, you know, got to spend a lot of money going on the campaign trail for months and months to try and get your film out there. You got to do all the right things, tick all the boxes, jump through all the hoops. Do the best films ever get there? Like everything, art is subjective, and I would argue that a lot of the movies recently are not worth the price of admission, let alone an Oscar. I mean, if the best films did win, Spider-Man No Way Home would probably win the Best Picture Oscar. It was by far the most popular movie of last year and satisfied a majority of crowds. Where something like Power of the Dog split audiences and was very divisive. Some people loved it, other people thought it was the most boring thing ever made. So do the best films ever win? And what is the best film? I mean, if there is a criteria the Oscars look for, like a quality control, or like with any type of other award, there has to be some type of, well, there usually is some type of criteria or checklist they have to go through. Do the Oscars use the same thing? I mean, they probably do, or there probably is some type of system like that, but they don't really make it known or available to the public. If they do, I've never heard of it. That's not to say it doesn't exist. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. But if there is a quality kind of control on it, how does it work? And what are the criteria a film has to meet? And this also brings up the age-old question of art is subjective. What one person likes, another person hates. So how do you agree on the criteria of a creative art form like filmmaking? The Academy can pump as much money as they like into the Oscars, but it will never make it good again. I mean, it might have been good and relevant at one stage, but I think that time is long past. Maybe they should try the opposite and try to scale it back. They tried to do that last year and it backfired horrifically. Maybe they need a younger group planning the Academy Awards. Who knows? But pumping more money into it and adding more glitz and glamour just doesn't seem to work anymore. If it is so easy to rig the system, it does bring into contempt a lot of the Best Picture winners in the last couple of years. Did they really deserve to win? If the system can be manipulated, and it has been manipulated, and you're just very clever about running a smart campaign, does that bring into contempt the winners of the Best Picture Oscar? You could also go one step further and say, does that bring into contempt the political winners from every election in history, especially in the age of corruption from the 1960s onwards? Can you really say that anything in modern society isn't rigged or isn't manipulated or played or leveraged to one side over the other? Fucking everything can be corruptible. The NBA was corrupted. Politics has been corrupted for a long time, so can you really trust anything? The movie industry has been tarnished. Are there any pure industries left? If they've all been tainted, how do you know what to trust and what not to? What's true and what's false? And now that it's kind of known that an Academy Award-winning film is chosen not specifically on the merit or quality of the film itself, but more so a creative campaign over the quality of the art form, can you really trust an Academy Award? And does the Academy Award for Best Picture mean jack shit anymore? As the article highlighted, movies aren't really picked because they're the best film anymore. They're not really picked on the quality of the film, or the theme of the film, or the narrative of the film, or whatever. It's more so the theme and the narrative of the campaign you're trying to sell, not the best picture. The best picture doesn't always win, and that is plainly obvious to see in the Academy Awards, specifically in the last 10 years. Has there really been a best picture that was really worthy of winning best picture in the last decade? There probably are a few, but I'd say a majority of the ones that did win probably aren't really the best movies that were released that year. Right, that's enough about the Oscars campaign trail. Time to move on to something else. So now we're going to look at some of the biggest problems plaguing Hollywood, not just now, but also in the past, and that is diversity, racism, and sexism. And after that, we'll move on to the infamous slap heard around the world. You know, Hollywood's full of double standards and hypocrisy. You know, one year they're complaining about sexism and the treatment of women in the film and entertainment worlds and how they'd just become sexual objects. But in another year, sexism is part of a sketch. They've excluded certain minority groups and certain classes of people for decades and decades, and then they've overcorrected to the point it becomes virtue signaling. It also doesn't deal with the real issues of racism in Hollywood or even apologize for it. There's a lot of problems in Hollywood. The only problem is they're not very good at fixing them. They're very good at pointing the finger at the general public without really dealing with the core issue of the problem, which is usually one that they created. Hollywood has done nothing but sexually objectify women for decades, and now they want to complain about it. They complain about the problems that they help cause. And it's not just women, they've done this to many other groups in society. But yet it's always someone else's fault. They never complain about how they've made people look in film and TV. It's always the general public's fault, and we're the ones at blame. Yet you've spent decades degrading Latino culture, African Americans, women, intellectually disabled people, and disabled people. So who's really to blame here? Hollywood doesn't like dealing with its own shit. They don't like apologizing for it either. They just like to point the finger and blame someone else. There's always, you know, huge amounts of attention on, you know, the quote-unquote toxic white males, i.e. Harvey Weinstein and the Me Too movement. I mean, you can't tell me that nobody knew that fucking prick was like that. You know, he's also not the only one. There's probably hundreds of producers and directors out there that were just as fucking perverted as him. And it's not something new. This has been going on a very long time. And at one point of Hollywood's history, that's how the game was played. And it's because of a few rich old perverts, everyone is a toxic white male or a sexist and a part of the problem. And there's been many instances where actors and actresses have been auditioning for a role and an actress freely offers herself for a part in a film for sexual services rendered to a producer. I think Ian McKellen said that. He got in a bit of trouble for it. He said he was in a room with an unnamed actress who offered to have sex with the producer of the film in exchange for a leading role and to get her career off the ground. So there's that double standard. If you willingly go along with that type of behaviour and that's how you think the game is played, then I don't think you can really criticise it or talk out against the treatment of people like yourself if you are a part of the problem. There's that huge issue about the pay dispute in Hollywood. Men get paid more than women, etc. And that is true to a degree. Men probably do get paid more than women in Hollywood. But the issue isn't always reported on accurately, which also makes it very hard to determine what is real and what is not. For instance, you have the Chris Evans and Gal Gadot pay structure of their Captain America and Wonder Woman contracts. They both got paid about $200,000 or $300,000 for the first movie. It was obviously a multi-picture deal. They were both signing on to play their respective characters more than once. I think that was, you know, it's for 7 or 8 times they're going to play Captain America and Wonder Woman. And with the success of each film, the pay increases dramatically. And I heard one article saying, oh, Gal Gadot got paid less for Wonder Woman. It didn't go into the facts or the pay structure of the deal and how she would eventually get paid in the millions. And I mean, why would they give her $20 million for the first movie anyway? They don't know if it's going to be a hit. She's basically a no-name actress. Chris Evans is, you know, a bit more well-known now, but they're not exactly Tom Cruise, Brad Pitt, or Nicole Kidman. So why would they get paid $20 million when they're not a $20 million actor? That's always failed to be mentioned. It's not always as black and white as the media and the news try to make it out to be. So this brings us down to the current Oscars. This year, all the outrage over white male sexism and toxic masculinity was ignored. Regina Hall's shameless gag involving getting men from the crowd that she liked to come up on stage to take a backstage COVID test using her tongue was a sexist and shameless gag. No one had a problem with it. It wouldn't have been a problem if Hollywood wasn't full of hypocritical cowards. How many times do they have to show their true colours? I mean, it's okay for women to sexually objectify men. I mean, what if that was Bradley Cooper or Leonardo DiCaprio on stage bringing up attractive women from the crowd? You would never hear the fucking end of it. If that was a man subjecting women to that type of objectification, you would never, ever hear the end of it. It would have been on the front page of every paper in the country. It would have been a completely different outcome. And I would have made a bigger deal about that than the awards. That's kind of what Hollywood's saying. It's okay for a woman to do that, but not a man. A sexist joke isn't okay if you're a man, but if it's a woman, the Academy will give you a pass. And then later on in the ceremony, you had Regina Hall's pat down of Jason Momoa and Josh Brolin. I mean, what the fuck? If Will Smith hadn't have taken all the heat for the shit show that was the 2022 Oscars, I think Miss Hall would have been the target of everybody's anger. She should probably thank him for taking the attention off of her. Yeah, that was Leonardo DiCaprio patting down 2 female presenters on stage, essentially filling them up on stage in front of millions of people. It would have been a completely different story. You would never hear the end of it, and he'd be the worst person in Hollywood. But if a woman fills up a man on stage and on live television, I guess it's okay. If the shoe was on the other foot, if a man did that and claimed it was a joke, he'd be labelled a sexist pig and probably never work again. He'd be Me Too'd in a second. But I guess because a woman did it, not a man, it's okay. And this is kind of what Hollywood's telling us. They're so hypocritical. If a woman does a shameless sexualization joke, it's fine. But if a man does it, you get Me Too'd. You got to pay a whole bunch of fines or go to jail or never work again. Which is really funny because the hosts of the show, Amy Schumer, Wanda Sykes, and Regina Hall, have been praised about tackling the political issues that are current at the moment this year and sexism in Hollywood, which I think is kind of funny. There was a political issue about you can't say the word gay in schools in Florida or something like that. I don't know a lot about it, which is hilarious because it's a bunch of talk and they get praised for tackling these big social and political issues, but to what resolve? Nothing happened off from it. It's all piss and wind. These political issues need to be raised, but the Oscars is not the platform to do it. Which is kind of funny because all that was forgotten about an hour later. I mean, Hall is the real culprit. The other two were trying to be funny. I mean, Amy Schumer took the piss out of herself more than anybody else did. Most of Amy Schumer's jokes were aimed at herself, but none of them condoned Will Smith after his violent outburst. So it's funny that, yeah, no one really condones or condemns anybody in the Oscars, especially if you're presenting. You get praise if you bring up political shit, but, you know, if you slap a comedian or someone like that, no one has the balls to stand up and say anything about it. So this brings up the big issue of diversity in the Oscars. They keep praising themselves about how the Oscars are different this year. They're more diverse. We have more categories and minorities that we've overlooked for the past 100 years. But what about Asians, which have been overlooked in pretty much every year besides the last two or three? Asians have won in the past couple of years, but have been ignored in pretty much every other. A group of Japanese filmmakers won this year, but I can't remember what it was for. And Parasite won last year, which is one of the first times a Korean film has been nominated for Best Picture or Best Foreign Film or something like that. Then you had that Korean film that was made in Georgia, which was directed by a Korean-American, that was labeled as a foreign film, despite the fact that it was actually made, obviously, in the US. But I know all the diversity issues in Hollywood are all the fault of the general public and not the fault of the deeply out of touch and struggling to stay relevant Academy. They're out of touch. The Academy is made out of mostly very well-off elite people. Hollywood has never been diverse. Just look at the films that are made and what the themes are over a decade or a period of time. Studios get onto one thing and hammer it to death. Until moviegoers lose interest, then the idea gets put back on a shelf with a big red mark next to it. Even if it is a good idea, it becomes a risk to the studio and a risk that the studio doesn't want to take. The fact there is so much attention on diversity just tells you it was never there in the first place. They have to draw attention to it so much and so painfully and say to the audience every chance they get, hey, look, the Oscars are diverse now. I don't think it is simple as a black and white issue. The real problem is elitism and a deep-rooted class problem. But tied to racism is elitism. A lot of problems in the world all come down to the haves and the have-nots. The ones with the money, the ones that don't have the money, and the ones that want the money. This brings up the question, are the Oscars so concerned about diversity, social justice, and being political that the quality of the film selected in the Best Picture, Actor and Actress and Director categories are influenced on the above rather than the quality of the film itself? And like, as I said, like, I thought Moonlight was a pretty average movie. Obviously the Academy didn't. Is it because it was a good film or because of the themes it represented? And obviously art is subjective. My tastes are a bit different. Another film that was praised by the Academy was Brokeback Mountain. And I saw that. I'm a fan of Heath Ledger and Jake Gyllenhaal, and I thought that movie was horrific. It was boring, it was dark and very disturbing. It started off okay, then I lost it probably about half an hour into the movie. It just kept kind of spiraling and getting darker and darker, and it was just I thought it was a very ugly and very weird movie. Heath Ledger and Jake Gyllenhaal's performances were flawless. Ang Lee's direction was great. There was just something about the movie that I didn't really like. I liked the cowboy element, that part was cool, seeing the huge wide shots in up in the mountains and in nature and doing all the cowboy shit, that was cool. It wasn't the gay thing that threw me. There's a very dark element to that movie that I didn't really see coming. The more the movie went on, the darker it got, which is probably how the book is, and it's probably how the film was meant to be made. I just didn't really like it. Michelle Williams is also great in that movie. It wasn't my cup of tea. And a lot of the other Oscar movies that I've seen over the years have been just boring as shit. Some of them are like 2.5 hours long and they're just these epic fucking kitchen sink dramas that just don't go anywhere. I didn't see La La Land. I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing it. But everyone I know who has seen it hates that movie. They say it's one of the most boring, over-the-top films they've seen. Damien Chazelle has won a couple of Oscars, but, you know, is it because his movies are good or because, you know, he was good at playing the campaign trail? So in the past few years, starting around 2015 or 2016, there's been a very obvious theme running through the Oscars. Last year there was a few Asian winners, which has been a first. Before that it was Latinos, and before that African Americans. And now this focus has shifted on LGBTQ plus rights and disabled issues, which have all been ignored pretty much forever by the Academy. It's only recently that they've even decided to acknowledge disabled actors and the LGBTQ plus community. And Coda won Best Picture this year. So this year, all the winners were very diverse. We had a female director, an African-American Best Actor, a white woman won the Best Actress, Latino Best Supporting Actress. Best Supporting Actor was a white guy who was also disabled. He was deaf, so they covered all the bases this year. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I think it's great that they are being more inclusive and more diverse. But why haven't they been diverse the past 94 years? It's only when the social media generation started pointing the finger at the Academy for a lack of diversity that they actually stood up and did something about it. So are the films winning on the merit of the film quality or because of the themes they represent? So the first African-American to win an Oscar was in 1939. Her name was Hayley McDaniel, and she won for, I think it was, Gone with the Wind. So it was another 10 years before another African-American won an Oscar, and that was Ethel Waters. It was another 10 years after that. Jontina Moore won in 1959. All these were for Best Supporting Actresses. They weren't for Best Actress or Best Actor. So the first disabled person to win an Oscar was this year, and that was Troy Kotsur for Coda. So the Academy might pretend that it's diverse and inclusive, but they're definitely not progressive. Remember, it was only a few years ago when it was cool to recycle your award season clothes and all the food was vegetarian. So where has that all gone? A couple of years ago, yeah, vegetarianism was a big theme in society, and so was recycling your clothes and doing something about climate change. So what do the Hollywood folks do? We're going to recycle our clothes this season. We're only going to wear them. Rather than wear them once, then throw them away and get new ones, we're going to wear a tuxedo right throughout the award season. They did a great service for the planet. Why haven't they been doing that all along? Why do you need another black tux for every part of the award season? It's a black tuxedo. No one's really going to be able to tell if it was worn once, twice or three times. I mean, they all look the fucking same. Dresses, on the other hand, are a bit different because that's the way human beings are in society is. You judge people on appearances. So if Nicole Kidman wears the same white dress to every award show, it's going to be pretty obvious. Which, unfortunately, that's the way society is. But someone could take a stand and go, I'm going to wear the same dress or the same suit all throughout the awards ceremony. They could take it one step further and wear the same dress or suit for the next five award seasons. According to the Public Relations Department of the Academy, last year's Oscars was the most diverse it has ever been. Was that part of the plan all along, or did they deliberately steer the Oscars ship that way? So when you look at the manipulation that goes on in the Oscars campaign combined with their obsession with current social and political themes and issues in society, it does make the Oscars very hard to believe that they are not manipulated. And the more they keep acting like virtue-signaling hypocrites and attention-seekers, the more things look like they are rigged. If you take these few elements, it makes it very hard to believe that the Oscars are won on the merit of the film or the performance alone. And it's not very hard to see why. The Oscars have self-inflicted most of their own problems over the past couple of decades. And this is not just in recent years either, but this goes right back to the very start of the Academy Awards ceremony back in the 1920s. Not having a host is also a very big mistake. It only reflects the Academy's mindless, directionless outlook. I can't remember what the reasoning was why they got rid of the host, because the host is like the director. He is keeping everything together, he's steering the ship, and he's making sure you don't run aground or go too off topic. He keeps everything nice and neat. and keeps the show rolling along. Having the three hosts, non-hosts, whatever they want to call them, share around the responsibilities and pop up every half an hour to enter and remind you that you are watching the Academy Awards is a complete clusterfuck. The days when they had a single permanent host were the best. My suggestion is they bring back Billy Crystal. He hosted the best and the most successful Oscar shows. He's hosted 9 times. So bring back Billy. Get some stability back in the Oscars. Have a direction. And have someone that, like Billy Crystal, who is likable, that can point people in that direction. And that can steer that ship well off of those very rocky political and social issues and keep it just about the movies. And this is a little off topic. I think Dune should have won everything. I think it should have won Best Picture. Denis Villeneuve should have been nominated for an Academy Award for Best Director. It did win a lot of technical awards, but it should have won Best Picture, Best Adapted Screenplay, and I think Denis Villeneuve should have been nominated for Best Director. It was a fucking masterpiece of a film and was by far my favourite film of last year. And I said it before and I'll say it again, it's time for a new award that includes popular films, best superhero film, best comedy, best performance in a comedy, action or superhero film. You could even have an award for best action body, best action physique. That'd be a good way to revamp the Oscars rather than expecting them to completely change. Alright, that brings us to the end of part 2. We'll pick that up again in part 3 of Ding Dong Oscars Dead. So definitely stay tuned for that. Alright, that brings us to the end of the show. A big thank you to everyone who listened. If you'd like to support the True Thing, there's a couple of things you can do. Head on over to the Facebook page, like and follow it. Subscribe to the podcast on your preferred podcast player. Rate and review the True Thing on iTunes. It helps get the show out there and rise through the ranks, as they say. Whether it does or not is a different story. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell people you work with, help spread the word, get the Truth Tank out there, and I'll be back in a couple of weeks with a new episode. Right, big thank you to everyone who listened to the end. As always, I'm the Tank, this is the Truth. May the Truth be with you.